Management or Beasley Media Group.
Good evening, everybody, and welcome to Inside Scoop. I am Shomel, and my co-host Brittany will be joining us very soon. And that is Sabir. Hello, Sabir. So Brittany will be joining us very, very soon. She's actually just helping transfer. I'm sorry, not transfer. Helping the guest that we have coming on with coming upstairs today. So, sorry, my toddler has me a little bit razzled today, waiting for G-Mom to come in and get him. So we do have a very special guest today, and as you may know, myself and Brittany. We decided to do Millennial Mondays once a month to kind of get a perspective or input on how millennials see society today and everything that's going on and how we feel like we are benefiting from helping our communities, especially our youth, and, you know, bridging a gap between adults, older adults, and the younger adults and the adolescents and the children today, especially because we work literally hand-in-hand and hand-in-foot with these populations and these actual children. And there's a huge gap that we have come to understand between the different populations because of the fact that we don't always see eye-to-eye and have time to understand one another. So, well, Millennial Mondays, and excuse me, I'm still very nervous. Like, this is my first time on the radio, but it's doesn't get any easier because I'm not always the person that's talking unless I have to talk in front of a crowd. I'm usually the person that's listening in my profession. I'm a therapist, so I do more question seeking and then response from the person that I'm actually seeing as a client or a patient. So I do apologize if I still seem a little bit nervous, but I am. Sorry. On top of that, my allergies are acting a little crazy, so bear with me because I just stopped to sneeze. So again, we do have a special guest today. Her name is Amina Collin. She is the owner and founder of Owning Your Morality. What her company actually does is they actually deal with families in the communities and dealing with death and their responses and how they can reconnect with one another. So she'll be in shortly, and so will Brittany. And if you guys aren't familiar with Brittany, my co-host from the last show that we actually did, she is involved with the communities and the politics with adolescents and millennials. So she does a lot of work with campaigning and voter registration and getting our population and generation to actually jump on board with voting, because as we know, it is very important. And if everyone isn't voting, then we get results that we're not happy with. And we can only, you know, be angry with ourselves in situations where we don't see the outcome in our way. So they'll be up shortly. But in the meantime, I'm trying to figure out how to be a mom and a co-host today at the radio station. And I'm hoping my mom will jump in soon and come and get my son because he is busy. So more than anything, this is what I'm learning, that like the responsibilities of being a working mom and trying to figure out life and trying to figure out how to make things happen for him and make him happy and keep him occupied so that he's less busy than what he is right now. And he's very, very busy right now. So please bear with me because I am chasing after my toddler. So I think Brittany just jumped in. So she's walking in right now. I'll just let them reintroduce themselves so you guys are familiar with them. I'm so happy I only had to talk by myself for about 5 minutes because I'm very nervous still. And I'm like tripping over my words, trying to be a mom and get him situated. And yeah, Brittany just came in to save me. So I introduced you guys briefly. But just jump back in, reintroduce yourself, because we're only here once a month. So I kind of gave a little background on you, and then I did give a little bit of background on you. But I cannot explain your company better than you, so...
Yeah, Brittany, I got her bio.
Brittany will start, and then Amina. Amina will go... Yep, Amina, that's your mic. Amina will jump right in, and then I think we have breaks in between. Let's get started.
Wait, how was your weekend, cuz? Like, you know...
I've been like... Well, you know, I went to Dubai in August.
Yes!
And I literally got my first 8 hours of sleep on Sunday.
Yes, yes.
Wow. And I went in August, and I have not been asleep yet. So yeah. 8 hours was very beneficial to me, because I got up and was like... cleaning and scrubbing walls and housing and cooking. I was like, oh, I feel refreshed. I didn't have a baby on Saturday. Yeah. So, you know, I got my good 8 hours.
Yes, yes.
Not a foot in my face or anything. So I'm happy about that, because I was very overwhelmed and stressed and tired.
Self-care is important. We talk about that all the time.
Don't we? Because let me tell you, sis, I look like a zombie. I look like the Walking Dead. I was like, this ain't me. I need a fresh face. I was trying to put makeup on. I'm like, I don't even wear makeup. Like, let me try to figure this out. Like, you know, life is crazy right now. But, you know, I made it work. You know, and then he had his fifth birthday. So life was going on, and trying to jump back in and get back into the hospital. And, you know, just doing everything. But... otherwise, I had a great weekend.
Awesome, awesome. Hey, guys, it's me, Brittany. Thank y'all for tuning in to another Millennial Monday with Inside the Scoop. Thank y'all so much. And I'm so excited. This is our second episode. We still growing, learning, doing, and we're excited that y'all still hanging in there with us.
Sitting there looking at the door like, where's
Yep, you know, sometimes the building is a little hard to find, but we got it. We got it. We mastering it. You know, it gets better and better each time we go.
My water almost gone.
But yeah, I'm so excited because we have a special episode. We have a special guest here with us today. She's a millennial herself, which I'm excited because we have, our generation is really empowering not only themselves, but the community around them. So it's always exciting to hear how we are taking responsible and being accountable for things we need in our lives. So I'm going to go and read this beautiful young lady's bio. In her name, and we're going to go into it. No matter which hat Miss Amina Collin, MBA, the native of West Philadelphia, is wearing, her goal is simple: to serve the community, empower others, invest in themselves, drive measurable results through game-changing efforts. She was educated in the Philadelphia public and private school system. After graduating, she attended Millersville University, where she earned her bachelor's degree in speech communication, with a concentration in public relations. After, she went on to University of Phoenix and received her master's degree in business administration while jumpstarting her career in human resources upon the chase of the dream while serving families in Pennsylvania, New Jersey, Delaware, and New York. She recently graduated from mortuary school. So that should give you a kind of an idea of what we're going to be talking about this evening.
Scary.
But Amina is a phenomenal Black queen who is the founder of Owning Your Mortality, an environment that fosters mortality awareness and inspiration through education, training, and innovation in the community. And I want to definitely give her a chance.
Let's give you a round of applause. Yes, Black excellence. That went to mortuary school.
After getting her master's.
I thought we was the ones that don't want nothing to do with this.
That's why we got to talk about it.
I'm in for a surprise. Listen. I'd be like, let's stay alive. Let's keep it together. I'm the therapist, so there I'm the one go. That's like, let me talk you off this ledge, okay? Like, we're not going to do this. Like,
so without further ado, we're going to introduce the amazing Amina Collin.
Yes.
Thank you, ladies. I just have to express my appreciation and my humbleness as far as just having the opportunity to come and just speak with you guys and share some time. But then also, like I said, to let the cat out the bag, or to pretty much just put it there to say, yes, I'm here to talk about death. I'm here to talk about owning your mortality, which nobody wants to talk about. So this face, this queen, is here to change the narrative, to create a totally different dynamic, and more so to say, hey, let's prepare. Let's change. Let's stop the negative experiences. Let's stop the whoo, it's death, it's right. a goose. Let's put it to rest that no, I'm in a funeral home day by day, and no one has jumped up and grabbed me. So we're going to put that to rest.
So can you tell us a little bit about owning your mortality and why it's so important for a company like yours in the community, especially the Black community?
Wait, can we back up a little bit? Even get into
let's talk about it before we get into the nitty gritty
because there is a story, but I don't have the traditional story like most people that work in funeral service. I am not the child who has been trained up or been around funeral homes or even the deceased for 7 or 8 or 10 years. I'm not. I'm actually grateful enough and blessed now to even say where I came from here, to say that I have had the opportunity to be in the switch of the field for 4 years now. Mm-hmm. But my story is a little bit different to say I was the 7-year-old child, though, that experienced death.
Okay.
Repeatedly, ever since I was 7 years old, there was transition and death always around me. Mm-hmm. Depending on the age that I was, depending on who it was, or depending on what actually happened, then that would determine pretty much how I dealt with it, how I would recover from it, how I even pictured and internalized. So I, too, at a time, just like anybody else, was like, funerals, death, what's going on? But I can say that it was because of my family that I am where I am now. Even my parents, I give all, you know, homage to them to even recognize that at a very early age that death is something that affects families. So even just being able to identify to say, well, when culturally for us, when someone passes away, all I knew is people were coming together. We were going to eat fried chicken. And there was also a chance that I was going to go to the funeral home and get to pick out a pretty casket, or to see all of the people crying, but not know why they're crying, but just know to give them a hug and just say, hey, it's going to be okay.
Right.
So in that also, as I was getting older, again, not knowing what my calling was or even how I was experiencing even losing individuals in my life, it then became a thing where I wasn't dealing with death appropriately. Mm-hmm. I was not talking. I was shutting down. I was writing songs. I would go in my room and not want to talk to anyone. So my mother was a teacher. The teacher in her identified, well, involving me in the process when someone passes away, anything from being with family, knowing that we're going to gather, we're going to pick out flowers, we have to make everybody feel comfortable. There's going to be a guy that comes to the house. That's what my thought was. And he was going to remind you about the insurance that he had, that he's been coming to the house and collecting different things. That was kind of my recollection. But again, still not knowing and simply just saying, I'm trying to not say that I'm okay, knowing that I'm not okay.
Right.
And still kind of just going through the phases. So again, went on, didn't think of nothing of it. I had an interest in design. So in high school, there were times that I designed obituaries. It was times that, again, when people passed away, I was definitely involved in the behind the scenes of the families just going through arrangements and going to the funeral home. But again, I was just a child just trying to figure out really what did that mean? Do people really go up to the sky? Do they go to heaven? Do they go to hell?
Right.
Do people really come back and haunt you?
Like, we still wonder.
Right. What is going on here? So that kid grew up, and that kid also then also started to see and experiences again with my family, rather it be from different states. I've traveled to different states with my parents, going to funerals or different things like that. I can say that my family has also been a family where we care for. So even seeing the other side of family members being on hospice or things like that, or my family not making decisions to put them in nursing homes and actually being a part of the health care and the hospice, or being the grandchild for some reason, because I was always curious. When my grandfather passed away, I was transitioned with him when he was in the house in hospice. Even now, some of my friends and family now it's like, well, so then it comes back and it now says a calling. But literally 4 years ago, I was working for a healthcare correctional company. I worked in the county jail system for 4 years in HR, and that was the last HR position that I had. I randomly one day experienced having to go in and do a tour and being locked down in a facility for a couple hours. Oh. When getting out of the facility and being safe and notifying my family, I too said, you know, let me make some changes, because just being in that environment, it was no one in the same to say, I want to help people. So I went in that environment to again say people that looked like us, our brothers, sisters, cousins, aunts, and uncles, they too needed someone to be an advocate and be an advocate for allowing them to get good health service. But again, I took a step back and I literally said, I came back to my office. I was 30 years old and I said, what do you want to be when you grow up? I knew that I wanted to help people. And then when asking myself that question, I experienced the loss of a friend. I went to a funeral and I was literally just seeing all of the pieces, people running around, people shaking, people this, people that. I saw how the funeral home was also handling the family, and I'm like, they don't care about them.
No, it's about it was about a dollar.
Shit.
It's about a dollar.
So it made me take a step back and I said, I can help someone. I also have always wanted to aspire to have my own business. I never knew what kind of business. I was always patient and I always said, I'm going to speak into existence that whatever it is or whatever the plan is that I will generate into something. But again, not knowing, I just knew I always wanted to be an entrepreneur. I also knew that in time I would identify of the way to go into entrepreneurship, because everything is not for everyone.
Yes.
Right.
So taking a step back and again, not kind of knowing, I went fast forwarded. I asked my current, at that time, my job, would they make accommodation for me to start going to mortuary school? And they said absolutely not, because it was not something that applied to the job that was there. So something random. I just took a step back and I literally, for my birthday, my 30th birthday, I said, hey, let me apply to mortuary school and see what happens.
Yeah.
I applied to mortuary school. That was in March. Kind of went through the process. I had spoken to existence that with my job, I would take the steps that I needed to kind of transition out. By July, my prayer was answered. I was laid off. I was laid off from my job on a Friday. By Monday morning, I was receiving an acceptance letter to mortuary school.
Nice.
My journey started. I've never looked back since then. Prior to that, I had never worked in a funeral home. Probably about 2 or 3 days after I got accepted to mortuary school, I found the nearest funeral home that was in the area of some place that I watched or different things. And I took my resume in. I went in. I introduced myself. I was told to come back to keep showing that I was interested. That was on Monday or Tuesday. By Friday, I was hired, and I've been working in the funeral homes ever since. So that's where my journey started. But simply just even saying that literally the reason that I changed careers or began the journey in the funeral services, I literally have the opportunity to help people do one of the hardest things that they will ever do in their life.
Right.
And it is important that we are aware of what's going on. It's important that we are feeling guided. It's important that we are being aware. And 9 times out of 10, the average person, but then the average African-American person does not know about that process.
Mm-hmm.
So now in turn, yes, I'm still here helping people. But now literally every day my goal is to get someone to say the word death. My goal every day is to get someone to look at what does not last forever.
Right.
As much as we say, but even no different to say, do we really want things to last forever?
Not at all.
Absolutely not. So it's no different. But even in the goal or coming back and even saying that, hey, we got the same 24 hours, or even now, even saying that holding people accountable and saying and bringing awareness of your mortality, life is inevitable. Mm-hmm. It's nothing that we can do. It's nothing that you can do to say and or do to kind of fast track whatever your story is going to be. Now, granted, of course, we all can make different decisions and choices sometimes. But overall, I just try to explain to people on a day-to-day basis that we don't know when our last is. So whenever that is, why not just know that whenever your last is, you feel accomplished or you feel happy or pleased? Or if someone has to walk up to you and say, who was this person or who did they did? There's something that you left. And that's how we leave a legacy. Or even now taking the opportunity to educate our people of what this process is going to be to prevent another family from folding at the table. We fold at the table at the funeral home. We're folding at the tables with the lawyers, our estate lawyers that are making sense and having to read the will and or the lack of a will, and or now individuals that are having to get involved with our family business. Well, most of us, how are we raised? Whatever happens in our house, what stays in our house? So if that's the case, when it's time for someone to find out what's going on, what happens? We don't have the information that we need. We are putting our families in so much disservices now.
Yeah.
We are leaving our lives and burdening them our family when we're no longer here. Just like we love on each other every day, we got to love on each other when we're no longer here. Your baby, he gonna need you no matter if you here, or not.
Let me tell you, right? So listen, because I said I work at the hospital, right? So, I'm on mommy duty. So
listen,
but
it's a pandemic.
The baby's got to be here too.
Yeah, before I skip, right? The smartest thing I ever did is, you know, everybody's like, "Oh, I got a life insurance policy." No, my son has 6 life insurance policies.
There you go. Talk about it.
And they're all $1 million policies. My son is a sole beneficiary with second beneficiary as my mom, because I can never know, like, you know, I'm in my 30s. I travel. I love life. I live life, right? I could be walking out somewhere and something happened to me. Accidental. There's accidental insurance on there. If I don't have no limbs and I'm still kicking and breathing in some type of way or form, fashion, he's still getting taken care of, right? So that's for me to say, like, you know, I've always been a kid, right, that was scared of funeral homes. And I'm going to tell you why I was scared. I was scared because my grandma, well, not really a kid. My grandma passed away when I was like 19, and I went and I seen them like preparing her, and they were scraping at her eyes. At this point, I'm at college, you know, beating my face. Oh, no, I stopped wearing mascara. When I seen them scraping her eyes, I said, okay, is this painful at this point? Because I feel like she can still feel this, you know, like, and that's me. That was the therapist in me, like, understanding what you're actually saying, like loving on my grandmom even after, like you just scraping at her face. My girl probably feel this, you know. Don't be doing that to my girl, like, you know. So, you know, on a therapy side of it, like, I completely agree with you, because like I find that, like, yes, I have moments where I cry, but when it's time to be together, I'm together. But I'm also the African-American, because ghetto stuff happened at funerals that I'm like, you know, it's some mockery stuff. Just leave it alone. And then as soon as you try to be the bigger person, they popping off at you. And I'm like, hold on. I'm from 24th for Berks. That's not what we about to do, right? Because I want to be as professional. And it's not even my field. This isn't my profession. This isn't my family, you know. But there's a connection, because before any of us was alive, we all came together. We don't know who related to who. Like, I can't tell you. Like, he might be my cousin. I don't even know, you know? Like, in some way, some form, we're all connected, right?
Yeah.
So it's not just to say, like, black families or Caucasian families. It's everybody, that the disconnect is with.
Yeah.
It's just more painful because as a culture and a race right now, we're going through it the worst. And we're going through it with so many younger individuals who mothers don't know how to bury their kids, and fathers don't know to have the words to say, I wasn't there, I was in prison. But you have mothers trying to step up and teach boys how to be men. And why is it that in our society, the men are still failing and making sure that these boys have some type of goal mind around them?
They were failed.
But they too. And this is why, like you said, having these conversations or even every day. I have a goal, like you said, to change the narrative. But even, like, it's interesting because Own Your Mortality is an umbrella.
Yeah.
And even it's so crazy because it starts at the generation of encouraging people to own their mortality.
Yes.
But owning your mortality literally just starts with you being self-aware of yourself.
Yeah.
If you are self-aware of yourself, then in tune, you can intentionally be self-aware of individuals around you, personally, strangers, vice versa. You're going to be interacting with family, but even on a day-to-day basis, we are acting in business.
Yeah.
But even in no difference, like you said, of the goal of saying, when I was experiencing the loss of my family, there was no one that looked like me. And I don't even mean being African-American. I mean being young, yep. being someone that I could even look to. So like you said, I wasn't the kid that would be standing in the back of the church because I was scared. So even I identify, in addition to, again, I see so many of me, those little girls or little boys at 7, that's in the back of that chapel or the back of, you know, in a masjid. Because, again, we teach our children fear. My parents did not, thank goodness, or my family, thank goodness, did not teach fear, even reverting back to changing the narrative of even saying of taking care of our family, or even to, you know, their studies of even saying the American culture.
I want to ask you a question, though, in terms of you seeing with the, they say we got 400.
400. When I was literally on the phone with you this morning, it was coming over the news that.
How do, and like, not even just homicides, we got issues with COVID, a lot of COVID deaths,
overdose,
cancers, overdose, like so many different things are plaguing our society right now. How do you maintain, like, and go through this? Like, you're in, like, the seat to, you see these bodies, you see. Like, day in and day out, like.
So the way that I go through it is understanding that somebody else is going through it.
Mm-hmm. Mm.
And understanding that, again, somebody is always going to go through it. So also, I am self-aware that life is a cycle. I identify and I encourage individuals that life comes in, so therefore it has to go out.
Mm.
I identify that. Depending on what the environment's in, the blessing is that in funeral service, it's very verse. You are literally interacting with families anywhere from a first call of a family identifying that their loved one passed away to the time that literally I am now in a hearse and I'm pulling up to the cemetery to complete a burial.
And it's so it's rapid.
It's very fast.
It's very
but
fast.
Even in the process from start to finish, I have a goal to ensure that a family is secure, safe, aware, and educated. There's also changing the narrative that if we're talking through this, there are actually no secrets.
Mm.
Right.
And when I was young, also in culturally, or even like you said, the world of a funeral home and funeral service, the reason that it's also scary and dark is for some reason believed to be a secret.
Mm-hmm.
I am now encouraging people, as weird as it sounds, your funeral homes are community pillars. Your funeral homes are connected to you before you transition in death.
Right.
These funeral homes are here when you're living.
Yeah.
These funeral homes are here to educate and or even provide services of aftercare. Pre-planning and aftercare huge.
So you recommend for the families to go through the process with the funeral home.
Absolutely.
You know what's so funny that you said that? Because I had a cousin that passed away in the beginning of the year and he was Muslim. And, you know, they do it in the most purest form. Mm-hmm. And so I wasn't there them watching him, but I was there. You know, I watched the before and after, and they wrapped him. And I thought I would, like, be broken down more. And the day the funeral came, I was fine. Because he looked so peaceful. Like the way I think even if it's hard for you, you still should go through the process. Like, even I buried my father this year, too. And going through that process. That. Thank you. And going through that process, too, I saw it from beginning to the end. And I feel like you have to be involved. And that, I think it makes you stronger.
It also makes you reflect and own your mortality.
But
it allows you to say, how do even the experience, or we get into these whole whirlwinds, because even a lot of times why the awareness and how you say, how do I go through it, trying to identify and even saying that the average person, again, does not know what comes across when someone passes away. All we think is that someone's dead and there's a funeral.
Well,
there's
also,
so many things.
I also think, like, the number one important thing is going back to where you say we have a disconnect within ourselves, too. Because, like, Brittany, if you weren't where you are now, like, you wouldn't have been able to handle.
You would have ran.
This, you know, like, the situation. That's or, real. Like, go through the process the
way
because
it was
did,
just
right?
me and my sister. No but, other family members.
So, like, you know, like, we were raised in a church, right?
Yes.
But I've always had, since I was 6. My uncle has always, my mom's youngest brother has always been Islamic, and I've always been around Muslims, right? My very best childhood friend, her grandpa was an imam, so I always grew up around Islam. And at 12, I knew, like, I want to take Shahada. This is what I want. Like, you know, I was disconnected from the church, and I'm like, this does not meet my needs. But I went to private Catholic schools, right? So I got the best of both worlds. So I got to experience it like, oh, here's the Bible, but here's the Quran, too. So we're going to break it both down to you so that you can understand it. And I will only say this to say, like, I became more connected with myself through Islam than Christianity. But at the same time, there's imperfections in Islam's, not so much as the religion or Islam. It's imperfection in the individuals who sometimes teach or sometimes you look forward to. So I had a disconnect for a while from Islam too. So me now looking to refine myself, I'm getting more connected to like, okay, let me go back to when I was in 11th grade and we had this project for senior year that was coming up that was like, oh, plan your wedding, plan your burial, plan your living arrangement, oh, like, wow. You know? So, like, and I appreciate that because, like I said, I grew up going to Catholic schools. That was my mom. If I had it my way, I probably would have went to Sister Claire Muhammad like the rest of the Muslims, right? And my son's father went to Sister Claire Muhammad. So when you went to a school like Sister Claire Muhammad, you were only learning about Islam. So I wouldn't have had the basic education. The bare minimum of it, because they teach you like Middle Eastern kids. So I'm learning everything about Islam. But because I went to private Catholic schools, I got to experience all of that. So I look at it as like, you know, I had near-death situations. Like I was driving a few months after I had my son, I was driving, and it was one of our last like bad snowstorms. I was driving up 76. Coming past King of Prussia on my way to work at Eagleville. And a car swerved into me and T-boned me into the guardrail. So when I tell you, like, I'm pinned in the car. By the mercy of Allah, I was able to jump out the sunroof and get myself out of it. But I've also been in situations where I'm walking down the street and two blocks up, they're shooting like crazy, you know, because I grew up in those type of communities. So I've had moments where I'm like, I have to teach my son. The unfortunate thing is, like, death came to our family this year, too, right? Your father passed away. My grandfather passed away, which is my stepfather's dad.
Yeah.
But he is, like, sonny to me. Like, he's my grandfather. So my son experienced that. So it'll be, like, I'll say, like, last month, right before I went away, my son, like, woke up and was, like, crying. And I'm like, well, what's wrong? Like, you know, like, you frantic, like, you had a bad dream. He's like, no, I saw a pop-up, and I just don't understand why he had to go away. Wow. Why is he still asleep? So I find myself trying to explain it to him in a comfortable way.
Where holistic he will be, way.
Yeah, like, right. Like, so I'm like, you know, even when we was at the funeral home, and he was in Georgia, in Savannah, Georgia. So, you know, very dark and gloomy down there. So it's already like, like, if you think, like, New Orleans, it's something like that with the flower trees. That
dark drape colors. Over.
Very dark, right? So it's already, like, a gloomy situation. And the family is kind of hostile. Like, my grandfather kids not getting along with us and just hostility. And I'm like, you know, like, I'm a therapist. So I'm trying to reason and have a reasonable mind. And then I have my son there. But he, like, I, like, had to catch myself because, like, I started, like, bawling at the funeral home, right? Like, the entire time. When we went down there, my grandpa was still alive. We come back home the week. It's 2 days before my birthday, my grandpa passed. So we fly right back down for the funeral. And my son was just there, so my son seen him. And my grandfather got sick right after I had my son. So he never saw my son, like, really interacting with him. He saw them, but that was right when he first had a stroke and stuff. So, you know, like, a lot of the experience that I had with my grandfather, my son didn't get. So now he gets that with my mother's dad, my grandpa Sonny. But my son's just, like, crying and crying and crying. I'm like, oh, okay. Like, how do I help him understand this? So I'm like, well, Pop-Pop's sleeping. But I'm very interacting with my son. The communication is always theirs. Like, I'm very straightforward with my son. There is no secrets between us. It's like, listen, it's you and mommy, right? This is what I need you to understand, right? So, and it's not for him to, like, grow up faster than I want him to. It's not for him, me to say, I want to take your childhood away. But it's real. You know, you are a black boy being, like, growing up. you'll be a black man one day, and I won't be there all the time to protect you. So I need this communication to be in your head. I need you to be able to talk properly. So when you're sitting in the boardroom, nobody's looking at you crazy like you don't belong here. Like, no, I very much belong here. I was educated properly. You know, I grew up in these type of environments. I learned from the streets and from the household, but this environment trained me. You know, like, you have all components. So it benefits. But like I said, like, I didn't know how to have those conversations with him. So
no one does. And yeah, that's why we create Own Your Mortality. But really quick, before I even circle to that, because I have to, we got to talk about telling children that when someone passes away, that they sleep. We got to talk about that.
Please, please.
We have to.
I didn't, like, and listen.
Because
you
what
know,
happens when your
therapist.
Son, again, what did he ask you?
So listen, right? Not even a set. So he woke up. This is the second time he woke up, right? And he's like, you know, Pop, why did he have to go to sleep? So at this point, the next time he in August when it happened, he's like, you know, why did Pop have to go, like, pass away? Like, why did he have to die? But I had to have that conversation. Right then and there, at the funeral home, I wasn't ready. So the next time it came back around was when he had a dream. And he's like, yeah, you know, because they say kids see angels. They so, do. Like, listen, I'm pretty sure this little boy has seen my grandma, because he just used to stare off in the corner and just laugh and laugh. And I said, I don't know if she's tickling him. I don't know. But also, my mom lost her oldest brother. And I promise you, him all the way. Like, so I'm like, you know, it's really like we come back around. We good. A break, guys. But no, we're good. Y'all want a break?
I'm good.
It's good
to
me.
It. It's
I'm
conversation
cool.
rolling.
But you know, like, so the next time it came around, like, I had that discussion the second time around, like, you know, Pop passed away. Mm-hmm. You know, he was sick. This is what happens. Like, I didn't go all into the stroke because he won't understand
of course.
That. But it's kind of like, you know, now he understands where it's like, I don't have to worry about him waking up in the middle of the night. It's just that at that point in time, I was like, I don't know how to explain this because I don't even know. Like, and
yourself.
You already feel
you
bad.
You don't know yourself, what you experienced.
But I'm like, I feel bad because we're all the way in Philadelphia. My grandma's down here taking care of him by herself. They're by herself. And I, you know, only thing that came to my mind is, 3 days before my papa passed, I spent the week with him.
Oh, wow.
And it was the best week.
Of
like,
course.
You know, I'm like pinching his cheek, like, oh, don't you do that. You take your meds and da, 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 da. And he just looking at me and I'm like, don't do that. And I'm like laying next to him and I'm like smiling. And he's trying to smile and I'm like, he knows me. So it was just like a feeling of like relief,
comfort
like
and
comfort. So like, you know, those tears I cried those tears and that was it.
Absolutely.
That was it. But, like, I had to learn how to deal with my emotions at a capacity. Hey, Mom! at a capacity where it was like, I need to be able to be strong for him. So, like, in that moment, I was like, I, like, called my mom. I was like, yeah, he asked me about Pop and I don't know what to do. And I'm like, you know what? I need to, like, because she always tell me, like, take my therapy hat off and deal with my family like family.
There
and
you
I'm
go.
Like, no, I need to put my therapy hat on at this point because I need to deal with him the way I would deal with the kids that I work with and still be nurturing and loving. But, you
be
know,
truthful, be honest.
Be responsible in my conversation with him and not hurt him to where it's like he's scared to go in a funeral home now.
Or like, he's scared to go to sleep.
Yeah.
So when we tell children that when people pass away that they're asleep, the children become scared to go to sleep because they're fearful that they're not going to wake back up. Or I had a very interesting experience. I was servicing a family. It was a young mother. She was murdered by her children's father in front of the children.
Mm-hmm.
There was a young boy and girl that they have. We moved forward and we're now at the service. At that time, I was driving a family limo, so I had the privilege and honor to escort this family throughout the day as they were experiencing the loss of a loved one.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we went through the service. The service was beautiful. We're now getting in the car. So I am driving. There is a grandmother of the daughter who's that was murdered.
Mm-hmm.
And then her grandchildren were in the back.
Mm-hmm.
So right before I am about to pull off, I have a tap on my shoulder. And I'm being asked, hey, miss, when my mom wakes up, how's she going to get back home? So that grandmother looked at me and I looked at her and I said, you told them that she was sleeping. And she said, yes. And she began crying and we held hands because she simply said, what was I supposed to say?
Yeah.
Right. Who wants to have that conversation or where do you say?
With kids.
Right. With kids. But also, we have to protect children, but also we cannot allow children to also grow up in a falsified reality.
Sure.
So like you said, it's not what we say, but it's how we say
it. Right. Yeah.
So even in the dynamic of, you know, having conversations, like you said, even for yourself, because even as parents, like you said, it's always the golden question. How old should you be to come in a funeral home?
Yeah.
How old should you be?
He was four. He just turned five.
Yeah. I'm a firm believer from birth. Bring children around. They have to. Because if not, we are doing them a disservice that they're not going to be able to function. In addition to, they also are going to follow the traumas that we as adults are experiencing because we too were not brought in a funeral home. We have been taught that when someone passes away, they're instantly scary. They're cold. They're dark. Our grandparents, there's no way that a grandmother that is literally sitting in a chair with you and loving on you 1 second, and because she closes her eyes, that changes that she's your loving grandmother. No.
You know what's so crazy, though? Because I think that when people hear that, I think there's like twofold. Therapy should be included in that, because I'm thinking about when I was 7 years old and I lost my grandpa, and my mom was very open with me. I went through the whole process, like funeral, everything. She didn't hide anything from me. And I knew he was dead, like, and so, no, I mean, I know I take the yeah, same, like, right. I knew he was dead. And so I would have, like, nightmares at night, and I always would see him in the casket, because, you know, sometimes when their face is distorted and they don't look at like themselves, right. All you see is that picture in your head. And so I think that you also have, that's a level of trauma
yes.
that we have to prepare our children for as well.
Right. But also, we have to prepare ourselves that we are also, again, educated about the processes that we are making sure that the funeral homes that we are interacting with, yep. that they care for us, that they're qualified, that they're able to provide you and your families with the best experience possible from the start until the finish. And after, once the casket drops, it's not supposed to end, because that's when now the therapy comes in.
Yes.
Right.
Because guess what? Now we're walking around saying, I'm cool.
Yep.
I don't miss them.
And then
them.
You're breaking down in your car about right. the crash.
My grandmother, my mother's mother passed away. My grandmother passed away in September.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't until March, my birthday, that I finally accepted that she passed away. My mother kept encouraging me, hey, Amina, hey, Amina. And I'm like, I'm good.
Mm-hmm.
I'm good. I was driving to work. My mother called me to say happy birthday, and it then triggered me to identify that my grandmother would call before my mother did.
Mm-hmm.
And I literally was on the side of the road on 76 having a complete meltdown.
Mm-hmm.
And it literally, it was just a form of even knowing and to say that, yeah, I'm hurt, but even no different than even kind of then having a mixed feeling to say, I understood I was at rest. My grandmother was 96 years old.
Mm-hmm.
She was cooking and preparing. And even again, now saying, you can't run from reality. And I am the person, like you said, yes, there are angels and they come. Or even with the thought process of, like you said, having that conversation. And even with your children, even to have, you know, to say, you know, someone laying in a casket. Or why is it that even we associate a casket with something that's gloomy and closing and different things? So that's why I'm always a firm believer that education and awareness, if we talk about a lot of things before, we're also, it's not the unknown. It's the, a lot of times we are creeped out because we're fearful. Or like you said, we've had some very unpleasant experiences.
Yes.
Rather it be that our loved one doesn't look like themselves, rather they we go in the funeral home and our loved one is actually, that's not them. It's yeah. a totally different person.
Yeah.
So it's some things that happen. Or like you said, even being included in the process of preparing your grandmother, but no one even literally like.
Yeah, because I ain't going to hold you like my dad. I'm telling you, me and my sister was like in there every day. I know we got on their nerves, but he was not finished yet. But I went into the, but they had them in the chapel.
Yeah.
And so I went in there. I was like, he don't look like himself. What's going on? But they wasn't done preparing him. Like, he, the finishing, they did an amazing job. But I was just like, you know, you already
anticipated and on edge.
Yes.
And that's why it's an opportunity even, you know, that's why we in the funeral homes, we are saying, what can we do?
Yes.
Even I remind people all the time, you are not burying your mother at this time. You are not burying your grandfather at this time. You are not burying your... So if you don't, if you're not going through the motions, everybody deals with grief differently and loss.
Yeah.
But also, like you said, let's get back into how do I personally deal with working in the funeral home?
Yes, please.
How do everybody else just even deal with loss? Like you said, putting our mental health first.
Mm-hmm.
So even now saying again, I'm the girl that before we're going to be literally at dinner, we're going to be at school, we're going to be in Miami, we're going to be everywhere. Before we leave,
yeah,
we're going to have a conversation because it's so irrelevant of everything just kind of comes together.
Yeah.
But even then, the major thing is, again, we talk about how do we live our best life. How do we live our best life is being the best version that we can mentally, physically, emotionally, financially.
Yes.
It's no different than, again, even identifying that one of the reasons that we identify traumas in these end of life experiences, before we even get to the trauma, we traumatized before.
Preventative, but right. I think that's not just in this.
No, but that's why I said,
we don't prepare.
I'm saying, but we don't prepare, but we're not preparing for life.
Yes, at all.
We're angry at life. We're not just angry. We're angry at the circumstances that we're experiencing. And now my grandmom died.
Yeah.
So put that. We're humans. We underestimate. Or again, I can literally, I had an experience where I'm on a service. Transitioning out, the service has started, the, you know, family is underway. I need to go out to the hearse. I'm getting in the car. I'm making a call. We're actually working on with my sorority where we're planning a anti-gun violence awareness rally. Well, I'm in a hearse. I'm on the phone. I'm on hold with Jordan Harris's team trying to get in contact with him. And I'm sitting in a car. As I'm sitting in the car, I'm looking forward. I'm also checking my surroundings, and I'm literally sitting on hold. I'm not paying anything any mind. I'm watching what's going on. I'm seeing what's going on, but I'm like, no, that's not going on. I'm sitting in a car. I'm working a funeral. I'm waiting for this funeral to be over, right? So there's no way that I can be sitting in a car at 10:15 in the morning, and I can be watching two gentlemen come into the middle of a street, have a conversation of maybe 1 to 2 words. I can see a gun that's being pulled out and a man being shot in the middle of the street at 10:15 in the morning.
Oh, my goodness.
I'm feeling I'm in a movie because it's silent. You can't hear anything. It's a silencer on the gun. It's a silencing experience, but then literally it's silent and then it rings. All of this noise. It's screaming. It's hollering. It's all these different things, and I'm stuck. I can't move. As I'm stuck, I'm hearing something screaming and screaming and screaming. By now, there's a lady on the side of me. She was actually headed to the service. She was coming down the street, but literally she's screaming and saying, it's a body, it's a body, it's a body in the middle of the ground. And I'm saying to her, ma'am, please take a deep breath. Please stop screaming. The same thing that you've seen, I've seen.
Yeah.
And I don't know what to do either. But also, if you're here for this funeral, I do need you to take a deep breath. I encourage you to put your car in park. You're going to be turning and making a left. There is a parking lot there for you. Once you do calm your nerves, please feel free to proceed to this parking lot, and you can make choices if you want to come in or not. But also, was I okay?
Right.
No.
Did I need to act like I was okay?
Yeah.
Did I also need to act like that I'm not recalling back when I was a child and seen someone else shot in front of me?
Mm.
And again, at 35, still saying what? I'm okay. Or us not understanding or even changing the narrative of saying what is also coming with self-awareness and owning your mortality to say we're human beings, mental health is real. The things that we see on a day-to-day basis, whether if it's work, whether it's family, whether there's different environments and different things that we are growing up in, it's a thing. So why are we also not changing the therapy, changing the narrative to say therapy, it's a vibe.
Mm.
The way that I'm able to survive and working in funeral service is making my mental health a priority and also encouraging other people to do so.
But you know what? It's so crazy because, like, you know, like, we as Black therapists, we do so much. Nobody wants it.
Of course. Nobody wants it, right? Because we're still saying we okay. It's yeah. cool. And we even tap the other person to even say, girl, you're okay.
It's not even that. It's a I'm an okay thing. It's kind of like, it happened, move on. Not even yeah. that I'm okay.
Yes.
Let's move on.
It's yes. the norm. It's accepted.
It's done, right? Boys get shot up and down the block. I'm like, I'm not okay with these kids okay. getting killed.
There you go.
I'm not okay. At, like, you know, and I don't wish death on anybody. But at one point, it was kind of like women and children were off limits.
Limits. Say it again.
They Things were have off changed. Limits. Things and have I'm changed. Like, you know, for you to know, like, I don't grow up in the streets. I'm not familiar with the streets. But I'm walking to the bus stop and I got killed. Or I went to my little cousin's funeral and I got shot. Because there is no safety.
I am working your little cousin's service and I got shot.
Yeah.
That's a whole nother thing that, like, we, again, I am telling safety? People. There's none.
And that's the thing. So, like, between your mental health, your self-care, and not having a balance of safety, there's no safety net anywhere. So for us to even jump into a situation where somebody's going to be comfortable, now you have to deal with comfortability on a whole nother level. I'm not comfortable because I might die coming to this funeral,
Absolutely.
Right?
Absolutely.
The funerals we go to is not because natural causes.
They're not.
Once in a while, your grandma might pass, your old aunt might pass.
But
you know,
I think
your
if
old
we
uncle.
Look, if we take a deeper dive, and not to take this subject off, but if we expand our thoughts, because working in this industry, I travel around the country and see so many different traumatic experiences. So we're experiencing gun violence out here. Things are happening. Haitian refugees are going through issues. You know, we have the Afghanis going through what they're going through. There are tornadoes, you know, natural disasters that are happening around the country. So I just feel like that's just what we have to deal with in this city. Not saying it is acceptable, but I'm just saying that's our
Oh, it's definitely a specialty. I mean, it's no different than, you know, just speaking to colleagues or even, you know, I went to mortuary school in New York. So right. even a different dynamic of having the opportunity and literally seeing what the experience is on a day-to-day basis, yes. literally getting on a bus and traveling from Philadelphia and going to New York, seeing experiences of what it is in funeral service in New York, getting back on a bus within the same day and go right back into a funeral home in Philadelphia. And like you said, see the interactions with families, friends, even like you said, the different indications of how people are dying. Yeah. It's definitely a thing, like you said, and even mentally. And again, the way that I now, again, deal with this is talking about it. I can't no longer be quiet. It was a time when I first came in funeral service because it was also new. And like you said, I didn't have the person. I wasn't especially aspiring to be literally someone who is providing services to a family, both on the funeral director administrator side, but also being someone that is able to provide services on the embalming and the preparation side. So ensuring that family members actually look like they look. It's a totally different environment when you're going in a prep room, when you are...
3 more minutes, so we're going to get your information. but you are more than welcome to come back.
I just want her to give us, I know we got 3 minutes, real quick, just give us three things.
So 3 tools is self-awareness of owning your mortality. The second tip is, with that self-awareness, also holding yourself accountable to hold the people and around you, encouraging everyone to own their mortality and planning. And the third thing is literally every single day, take an opportunity to do something today that is going to protect yourself and your family in the future. No longer make it acceptable that we are allowing ourselves to be burdens on our family. Mm. We are literally consistently doing our families a disservice of creating more traumatizing experiences when we lose each other. So if those are the 3 things that I can literally leave, is definitely self-awareness of owning your mortality. Also encouraging you to have conversations with your loved ones as far as planning and what can they do to, you know, make sure that these things are different. And definitely, like I said, doing one thing. Get life insurance, get a estate plan, contact your estate attorney immediately. There are some phenomenal ones. Everyday Esquire is one of the top ones here in Philadelphia. She has a plan for you. It's everything that you need. Get it. It's no reason. And literally contact the funeral home ASAP. Let them do the work for you.
And Miss Amina's going to give us her information.
Yes,
guys.
Yes, yes. How can you find me? So you can find me Own Your Mortality. Own Your Mortality is both on Instagram as well as on Facebook. And you can find me at I Am The Death Care John on Facebook as well as Instagram as well. I am always welcome to answer any questions and concerns, but please stay in contact and you can find me there.
All right, Mina, it was nice having you on the show
Thank
for Millennial
so
Monday.
Thank you so much having me.
We this hope to have you again
show.
Because I feel like this was not enough. An hour is not enough
to
talk
back.
About this.
Yes.
But guys, thank you for joining me and Brittany
yes.
again for Millennial Mondays Inside Scoop. We look
Every
forward
four
to
Mondays.
Seeing you. The next episode, we are going to be talking about voting, politics.
Yes.
That's Brittany's field. Yes. That's Brittany's field right there.
Yo,
politics.
Vote November 2nd, y'all.
So we know like the last week of the month is going to be a little bit too late. So we're hoping to probably get in here in the next 2 or 3 weeks to try to talk to you guys about it and getting out there and voting. Let's get it, millennials.
Yes, let's
All right, guys. Have a good week.
Thank you.
All right.